who's going to be handling the next one, Bob? Chip. All right. Item 9, Kenneth Morris. Chip.
Kathy, I'll go right to the slides. Mr. Morris is requesting authorization to install two 27-foot by 5-foot precast concrete breakwaters, approximately 40 feet channelward of mean high water. I believe your evaluation says 60. That was a mistake on my part. And to place 120 cubic yards of sand as beach nourishment landward of the breakwaters adjacent to his property situated along the North River at Ware Point in Gloucester County. Say, vicinity map, Mr. Morris's property is located right down there near the point on Ware Point and on the North River side. A little bit closer view, development along the shoreline is mainly residential with some agricultural land. The substrate, the intertidal and subtidal substrate is generally sandy. There are extensive SAV beds offshore of the property. This is the 2002 aerial photo with the Gloucester tax map parcels overlaid. You can note the SAV offshore. This is a plan view drawing. It didn't reproduce very well. That's a little bit closer view of it. I've highlighted this one so you can kind of see what's going on. Mr. Morris is proposing to install two 27-foot by 5-foot concrete box or breakwater units. They're 40 feet channelward of mean high water. Each breakwater will consist of three 5-foot by 9-foot boxes that will be floated in position and joined together. So each one of those is made up of three separate boxes. So there's a total of six boxes that would be out there. There's also 104 feet of concrete bulkhead that's proposed landward of mean high water outside the jurisdiction of both BMRC and the local wetland board. The breakwaters are positioned landward of the submerged aquatic vegetation and are located in approximately 1 foot of water at mean low tide. This is the cross-sectional drawing. It's also a little difficult to make out, but I've highlighted a few points in this. Breakwaters will be 55 feet channelward of this proposed concrete bulkhead and approximately 40 feet channelward of mean high water. This represents mean low water. This is the represents the box. It extends, I believe, 4.5 feet above the substrate. An aerial photo of the project site. If you squint and look real close, you can see some PVC markers out there. Your vision's like mine. I've highlighted them here for you. PVC pipes are marking the ends of each of the structures, so as I understand it, there'd be one here and one here. These are some engineered drawings of the box units themselves. I put these in case we need to refer back to them mainly. This is a picture was provided by the agent and contractor, Mr. Veazey. It's a similar breakwater that they've installed, I believe, along the Potomac River in this case. This particular deployment included some pilings around the perimeter. Mr. Morris's application does not call for the installation of any pilings. This is another photo presented by the contractor. Project site. Again, is located right here. In the VIMS report, in the original VIMS report dated September 7th, VIMS noted that the application was unclear and they questioned whether the structure was properly designed and whether it would provide the desired protection, especially since there was no beach nourishment included in the original proposal. On October 6th, we received revised drawings adding 120 cubic yards of sandy material for beach nourishment. Although the original proposal did not require a permit from the Gloucester County Wetlands Board because the breakwaters were channeled to their jurisdiction and the bulkhead was landward of their jurisdiction, the addition of the beach nourishment did necessitate a Gloucester Wetland Board hearing, and they approved the beach nourishment at their December meeting. In their revised comments dated November 2nd, them stated that the addition of the beach nourishment lessened their concern regarding the potential impacts on nearby properties, but they said they remained concerned with the breakwater construction. Vems noted that typical breakwaters are constructed of stone or other materials with slope sides and interstitial spaces that dissipate the wave energy. They expressed a concern that the vertical sides on the proposed structures would reflect rather than dissipate wave energy and could result in possible erosion channelward of the structures. In response, Mr. Veazey has argued that they have not noticed erosion or scour on the channelward sides of some other installations they've made. Kathy, I've got some more slides, please. Thank you. This is a ground shot landward of the shoreline landward of the proposed breakwaters, Department of Game and Inland Fisheries stated that they do not believe the project will result in a significant impact on threatened or endangered wildlife resources, and no other state agencies commented on the proposal. The breakwaters themselves will not encroach on any public or privately leased oyster ground. No comments were received from either the adjoining property owners or the general public in response to our public notice. Mr. Morris's property is exposed to a long easterly fetch, and there is evidence of erosion on the property. Accordingly, some type of erosion protection is probably justified to protect the property and improvements. The proposal includes the construction of a concrete bulkhead landward of mean high water. If properly designed and constructed, the bulkhead should provide some protection to structures built on the property. The breakwaters and beach nourishment are apparently designed to provide additional protection and to build and maintain a beach channelward of the bulkhead. Staff believes a properly designed breakwater system with beach nourishment may be an appropriate option for shoreline protection for this property. We're concerned, however, with the materials proposed to create this breakwater system. As noted by VIMS, a more typical riprap breakwater usually has side slopes and angular surfaces that serve to dissipate rather than reflect wave energy. Additionally, the interstitial spaces in a typical rock revetment do provide some habitat, which helps to offset the subtidal habitat loss due to the encroachment of the structures. Staff acknowledges that the proposed breakwater design possesses some cost advantages and may be able to be deployed in some areas that may be less accessible to the type of equipment needed to construct a large riprap breakwater. Access to this particular site, however, is not limited. Accordingly, we recommend denial of the project as proposed. We could, however, support the construction of a properly designed, more traditional riprap breakwater structure with nourishment. Be happy to answer any questions. The contractor is
any questions
here.
The commission? All right. No questions from the commission. We'll hear from the applicant, Mr. Morris. You swear the testimony you forgive be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your full name for the record.
Sidney Edwin Veazey. I go by Ed. I'm the president of Cement Shoreline Systems Incorporated. And Mr. Pruitt, I guess it was 5 or 6 years, well, 7 or 8 years ago, right after the big blizzard that we had a delayed meeting, and I came here first about their innovative L walls.
Right, I remember.
And I'll have a few pictures to show you that, because a lot of the questions are, this is a new concept, and it's just like in the Navy going from sail to steam with Fulton steam engine and from steam to nuclear power. There's resistance to change, and I think it's quite appropriate that we come here to explain to you another concept, another mousetrap in the control of shoreline erosion, which I think we can show you has been pretty effective. Now, let's see. Okay, that's our company, and it's spelled S-E-A-M-E-N-T, like a sailor would spell it phonetically. And first, why cement? C-E-M-E-N-T. Well, it's made of sand and gravel and limestone. Its prenatal condition is sand and gravel on the beach and limestone in the water. Its post-mortem condition is the same thing, and it has no chromium, copper, arsenic in between. So it is a natural material. It's just formulated by engineers to come up with something that is useful. Okay. Oh, okay, right down here. Right there.
Click on the next one.
The next one. There we go. Okay, I can do it here. A quick history. When I met Governor Allen between Senator and previously Governor and told him that we had a system that was taking back from Maryland what is rightfully Virginia's, he laughed quite a bit because he was going through the problem with the governor of Maryland, which we won in the Supreme Court. But we have it really taken back from Maryland what's rightfully Virginia's, as we will show you. Those are the L walls we came to see you about a number of years ago. They're 8,000 pounds. They have a tongue and groove on the sides, more so than what we had before, a key to keep it from sliding seaward, an angled splash plate towards the sea such that in storm conditions a wave will crash down, it will be deflected upwards, and a shelf on the back that when loaded about 6 feet with material, 4 feet by 8 feet on plan, that's a lot of weight that will keep it from tipping. There's the installation showing how they're bolted together, and I'm going to flip through these real quickly because the picture's worth 1,000 words. I'm going to be swift as I can to save your time. There's a T-wall groin. It's like an upside-down letter T that we notch in to over that splash plate and extend seaward. Yet on the seaward end, it's an angled one, a type C, we call it, such that if a boat came up, it wouldn't hit the corner of that concrete wall, but would just slide up there a little more gently. That's my Naval Academy classmate a year later showing how much accretion we've achieved naturally. There, this is on the Potomac between Fairview Beach and Caledon Natural Area in King George. The first installation was in 1994. You can see this is right after completion. You can see the height of those. And then later, natural accretion over the top of those boxes. And that we call a pier groin because it's concrete boxes that will withstand the ice and, as you'll see, the storms. This is the riprap next door after Hurricane Isabel. Some of these rocks were the size of truck engine blocks. And it went around behind. This first one we installed in 94. These walls have, by the way, previously survived Bertha and Fran and Isabel. The water at Colonial Beach was 13 feet high. The owner had used some of our T-walls on a separate job. This was her own thing, just to use them as terracing. They weren't designed for that. She used them anyway. And some of those ton-and-a-half units ended up down there on the beach and there from just the terracing up above. But our walls stood. The groin stayed in place. The pier got sheared off by the storm. But the walls were essentially intact. But the riprap next door, you can see how big they are, ended up down the beach. The neighbor on the upriver side had a vinyl bulkhead, and that's the result of what happened to his. It went within 10 feet of the house. Another job, upriver of Colonial Beach. Again, it got around behind the walls. The wall stayed in place. You can see how high the debris got. It was probably 12 feet high at this point in time in Isabel. But the walls remained. However, the bank next door receded 20 feet from here to here. That was 20 feet lost. It was about 15 feet high. So that is about 300 cubic feet per linear foot of shoreline that's now covering subaquatic vegetation or oyster beds. In Stafford County, a job we had done for the Robins, she was saying the night when they went out and looked at Isabel, that's how high the water was. She said he couldn't reach the height of the waves. Yet this is the result of their land once the debris was raked off. Not even the grass was disturbed. And I liken it to the wave hitting that large mass. And with the 200 feet, that is 200,000 pounds of concrete, and it's buried with almost on the landward side and the seaward side, such that there's probably an order of magnitude more mass than that that's resisting those waves. Yet next door, this bank used to be out at his left knee. And Dr. Harmison decided he would have his done like the others, and that was his job to repair the damage. These boxes, matter of fact, Jeff Madden, when he first saw those, I guess it was 8 years ago, I said, yeah, those boxes are one of the best ideas you come up with because it's so easy to put them in place. We just floated them in place and sunk them. They went through Bertha, through Fran, and through Isabel. They are a habitat for subaquatic vegetation. The Potomac is too rough around there. We got about a 13-mile fetch from the northwest and similarly from the northeast when storms come through. And there's no subaquatic vegetation growing anywhere around there because it's just too vigorous an environment. This is just prior to Hurricane Isabel during the evening. As you can see, he had a wooden fence there, and needless to say, it was completely gone after Isabel. Now, it wasn't not a proper bulkhead, but it was a fence, and it was treated wood, and that has been tumbled and eroded as it went upriver, and that's a lot of chromium, copper, and arsenic in the water. So I think our material is environmentally friendly, and it stayed in place. But when it came back downriver and the dust settled, that was the result. This was in about October. The attributes of the CBOX system, and I say the CBOX stands for the Systems Engineering Approach with Boxes, because it is a complete system, including the transportation, as you'll see. There are the attributes. I won't read them, just let you look at them, because you will have CDs that have all of this on it, and including a video that we're not going to go through because of time. Easily transportable is one of the watchwords, because we're shipping in a hollow concrete box 1/12 of the mass of an equivalent riprap breakwater. And furthermore, the footprint is about 1/3 that of a riprap breakwater because we do have the vertical sides. And I know there's some concerns on that, which we will address. Two basic principles here, Newton's second law of motion. We want to have a large mass that doesn't move, and Isabel indeed proved that. It proved our system to be viable, whereas other things disappear. And simply Archimedes' principle, you know, and it's very easy to put in these boxes. You can have floating breakwaters, you can have semi-submerged, which is what we're talking about here. You can also use them as the concrete backbone of a sand dune on the back beach, like Princess Down at Virginia Beach or Sandbridge, that could help hold the sand dunes together. And you could also have underwater reef breakwaters that are completely sunk, but all can be moved. Even these underwater, we have it such that you have a blow-in vent valve like a submarine, and you go down and apply air, you blow the ballast out, and they can rise to the surface, and you can relocate them or remove them if necessary. Similarly, the semi-submerged boxes can be pumped out, refloated, and relocated or removed, which is something that would be very, very difficult to do with rock. This is a 15,000-pound box, moving it down in King George County, putting it in the water at low tide, as far out as the excavator could get it. My son Warren and I pushed it out and downriver about 100 yards. We scuttled them, sunk them in place there, and they were there 3 weeks before Hurricane Isabel. And guess what? They did not move. And they just had water, and they had not had time to accrete sand by filling them. We have a trademark pending on that as well. Warren's moving one of them out there. Again, more subaquatic vegetation growing within the boxes. There have been crabs in the boxes, fish, barnacles on the sides. And here's another feature. We took those two middle boxes that we put out in August of 03, right under the middle, and we made it 100 feet long. And we simply put piles over it and made a usable pier. We call that a pier breakwater. And we had some groins there as well. And even behind, in the lee of that breakwater, lots of subaquatic vegetation growing, whereas all the other areas along there, there was none. Now, transportation, you can ship them by trucks, trains, ships, and barges, and they're easily moved. And they're compatible with the intermodal transportation system, which ships 98% of the world's commerce. Therein lies the engineering, the systems engineering approach to this. They're much easier because of the mass and because they're compatible with this system. They are much cheaper to transport, so you save the homeowner or the municipality money. I'm just going to flip through these real quickly. That's how you can divide them up. The C would be a 40-foot box. B would be a 20-foot box. But you can slice them vertically, horizontally, and longitudinally to get a family of size of boxes for what I would call the Lincoln Log approach to shoreline erosion. They can handle very easily in port. The truck left 10 seconds later after put that in place. This was going up to Charlotte, North Carolina. There's some in Seattle where they can double stack boxes and ships. And the installation, you can still do it by land. You can do it by sea. And you simply float them in place, connect them, fill them with sand or water, which is free. Mother Nature supplies that. No charge, no charge for installation, and no tax. Some smaller boxes that we installed in 2000, they were put in 18 inches of water. Shortly thereafter, there was 18 to 24 inches of sand about a year later, protecting that old ship that came from Mallards Bay, Maryland, that was breaking apart and floating down and endangering boats. There's some of the savings and cost avoidance. Going through that, you can make it to conform to ISO standards, large array of manufacturing plants. These are made for us, the L walls and the boxes at the Old Castle plant in Fredericksburg. They are part, Old Castle has 70-some plants in the U.S. They're the largest in the world, about 250 plants worldwide. We've licensed the manufacture to them. So what we're doing is essentially thinking outside of the box about the inside of the box, or what you, vice versa. We're trying to come up with a concept that is cost-effective, that is environmentally friendly, and it can do some of those things. This is boxes that we put in for Stratford Harbor, where it's, as you can see, pretty high there. They're 90-foot-wide lots. My son Warren installed these, put five of them together, 45 feet, half the width of a lot, with a Carolina skiff pushing it, and took them upriver about 1,000 feet or so, and sunk them in place. And December the 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, after installing them September the 23rd, you've got that much of a tombolo, and it's even more today. And he did also some down in White Sands Harbor, at the mouth of the Potomac. These are 7.5-foot high boxes, about half the size of a 20-foot shipping container. That's Warren in the water there. This is in November. The water's a little chilly, but it was a nice warm day, fortunately. That's a 140-foot breakwater in place that was put where there was originally designed to be a riprap breakwater, but it would have had a footprint 22 feet wide, and this footprint is 8 feet wide. So you're covering less subaquatic bottom, and he'll tell you about some of the results from that. There's some of the tombolos. There's the summary of it. It's affordable. It's efficient. It's flexible. And there's some of the ways we would like to test it, maybe the Army Corps of Engineers 227 program. And I'd like all people to think about it. Is it useful for Virginia? And I think we'll show you that it is.
Presentation. All right. You swear the testimony will give you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God.
I do.
We are dealing with an application here, not a dissertation.
The record, my name is Warren Tracy Veazey. This is 10 slides only on the actual presentation. Ken Morris asked me to put in a project to protect his property. He's building a house, a North Carolina style house on piles. He realizes he's not going to stop.
Mr. Morris, here, is he here today?
No.
You're his sole representative.
I'm his agent, yes, sir. I've already shown you the map. You've got an 8.5-mile fetch to the southeast. It's 1.5 miles wide across the North River we're putting in. Showing you the position of the pilings, the PVC pipe, showing where the breakwaters would go. The VMRC comments, they said it's not properly designed. They would have liked it farther out to build up a wider beach as the sole protector of the property. What we found with our bulkheads, we've had over a mile of them installed. Everybody's concerned about scour in front of them. You simply put out short groins or breakwater in front of it. We always have a beach in front of our bulkheads. They're always above mean high. This breakwater will provide the same thing. You don't just do one structure and hope Mother Nature doesn't get you around. They always do a bulkhead and add something in front of it. You add a usable beach to the homeowner, they're very happy about that. So that's how we've avoided the Corps of Engineers' distaste of vertical structures. We simply put a bulkhead in above mean high water and provide either groin or breakwater system in front of it to ensure the beach will always be there. Therefore, it's out of the water, except in really big storms. And then I'll show you here. This is what we did in Stratford Harbor. You can see in 5 months, there's not going to put like eroding cliff here, so its results may vary. This is a very high sand budget area. You can see the sand has built up in 6 months where you can now walk out to them. It's very easy to put them in. You can also reposition them, move them around. If you don't get the design right, breakwaters are still a bit of an art, not so much science, so you do have to adjust them. I've adjusted the upriver box 3 times now, and I think I finally obviously see it's working fine. They say vertical wall is not a scour. Well, for a bulkhead, I believe that, and that's why we put groins or breakwaters in front of them. The longshore current will take your beach away if you don't put something there to hold it. For breakwaters offshore, as you can see, there's a foot of sand in front of these breakwaters, and I've got pictures from 11 years now. This is taken with very strong northwest wind, which blew 2 or 3 feet out of the river, so that's why I can walk out there. These were floated in position and sunk. So you can see that there's a foot of sand built up in front of this. I've got 11 years of pictures showing that in 3 different counties, this sort of situation where you're not getting scour in front of breakwaters. Just, I don't know, the Japanese have studied it. They've got 8,000 breakwaters installed in Japan, and they show that sand builds up in front of breakwaters, and they use vertical wall caissons in front on the Pacific Ocean. So I think the Corps of Engineers puts out their guideline. They design them for oceanfront harbors, and that's the reason they don't like vertical walls is it will reflect the wave, and you'll have a steep wave when the two waves come together and double, and that can swamp a vessel coming in and out of a harbor. Here, obviously, it's not a harbor. It's off in the middle of the Potomac River. The wave doubling effect happens 2 or 3 wavelengths offshore of the breakwater, which is about 30 to 60 feet. Most boaters know enough to stay away from piers and breakwaters anyway, so in a big storm, yes, you will have wave reflection 60 feet offshore of this with a doubling and a steep wave which could swamp a vessel, but that's the only real effect. It's not going to erode the beach 2 miles across the river or a mile point eight in Mr. Morris's project. They're segmented so that you're not doing a continuous wave reflection energy, which I guess is what they found in Los Angeles Harbor or something, wherever the Corps of Engineers has against it. In the situation, you have a vertical wall behind it anywhere before these were put in, so there was wave reflection off the cliff before this job was done. Nobody complained about it. You can see here, it's hard to point out. I don't get the laser pointer. The doubling of the wave, when the wave bounces off the vertical structure and it meets with the incoming wave, you get a very steep wave pops up for a second and then dissipates again as the two waves separate. That is the Corps of Engineers' concern for vertical walls, and because they design harbors, and that would sink a ship if it's coming right around the corner. Out here in the riverine environment, it's really not a big effect. And obviously the scour, we've shown it doesn't happen. And not only do we only cover 1/3 of the bottom of a riprap breakwater, but the part that we cover is recreated in an improved fashion inside the boxes. So this box is 8 feet wide, so we now have 7 feet of sand inside that box, still water with sunlight on it, where SAV and whatnot can grow in it. Now I have a little pamphlet from outside your door. It says SAV needs sufficient sunlight to grow. A pile of riprap in a breakwater allows no sunlight to the 3 times the bottom it covers. So I submit to you that our boxes cover only 1/3 of what a rock breakwater will do, and the 1/3 that it does cover, it improves. You create a little nursery-like environment of still water with sand and or mud, depending on what's in the river there, that fills up inside this box. And we're starting to do some studies and see if I'm going to actually plant this with marsh grass in the next couple of weeks. The one in front of my house, it naturally grew after several years, the box in front of my house. But this one, we're actually going to come out and put some spartina in there. And now the bottom that we're covering of the state of Virginia, we're now improving and making a marsh out of it. Not something you can do with rock. This is, again, the White Sands Harbor job in the mouth of the Potomac. You can see what it looked like as we were starting to put it in October, and what it looks like last month. And this is another job just upriver from there, where the neighbor put in a gabion basket breakwater by hand, built a little temporary pier out there. Several months later, we came in, did this for this fellow here. You can see last year, there's not really too much accretion on either one, but several days ago I took this picture, we have a nice salient formed, whereas the neighbor doesn't have anything. Only I can explain on that is ours is not so porous, and the sand that does accrete behind it stays behind it, as opposed to a riprap one without filter cloths or anything. The sand will just wash right back out through the breakwater. So ours seem to be not only cheaper to put in, but much more effective. And I think they're of an improvement in the environment versus the riprap and the minimum habitat that it supplies. No possibility of SAV growth inside of it. And this is our newest designs we have, one for a sill, just putting a lot more holes in it so creatures can get through, whereas with a sill made out of rock, it simply kills all the horseshoe crabs and turtles and whatnot that try to get through it. They get stuck in the rock and die. So I've talked to the Terrapin Institute of Maryland to find the right size holes to put in it to make sure turtles and other large marine animals can get through to the marsh behind it. Otherwise, I think you simply have a dead marsh that you've created in your living shoreline projects. And this is a hex size box that we're designing also to break the vertical wall wave reflection into different angles. So it's the wave doubling that does affect is a much smaller amplitude. Okay. Any questions?
Any questions? Mr. Fox.
Yes. What is the relative cost of your product in place versus riprap?
The taller you go, the cheaper we get, because you have to build
the
taller the breakwater or sill or anything you go, the cheaper we get, just because you have to build a wider and wider base. For a the Northumberland job, that had a 7.5 foot tall breakwater, and we put in a bid, and they didn't even ask to. In the second question, they said, go ahead and throw it in. So I'm sure we were quite a bit cheaper. When you get down to less than 2 feet, the pile of rocks is not very big, and it's probably cheaper to put in a pile of rocks under that. Mm-hmm. But anything over that, you start getting, you know, much, as my dad mentioned, almost a tenth of the mass you have to put out there. You can put in, I've done 90 feet in a day with three guys, and I want to see the riprap breakwater. You say you can do that, and I can go and adjust mine. I can remove it.
Mm-hmm.
They can't touch it. Once it's in, they're in. And I've seen many a rock breakwater not effective because they're not angled the right way. They're still evolving the science on it, and they're stuck with what they got.
Mm-hmm.
We can go out and pump them out. And you can use a bucket and move these things.
Do they have solid bottom?
Most of them do. I've talked in North Carolina is much stronger worm scientists there, so they don't like even on the sill structures. They like wooden structures because they cover less bottom. So in that situation, I'm trying to talk to their Sea Grant fellow, Spencer Rogers, and see if putting holes in the bottom would also be beneficial to, because I guess some worms, you know, dig 3 feet down and come back up to feed. So that maybe I'll be putting holes in the bottom there. Our original boxes did have holes in the bottom. It's just when you plug it and you're floating it in the water, you've got more water pressure trying to leak it, mm-hmm. get leakage. So we came up with just putting holes right along the existing natural water line of the box, so you won't have so much water pressure trying to leak. Especially if you're moving these things, you know, a mile up the river, you don't want to have slow leaks because they end up sinking your
box. But you don't fill it. But when you put them in place, you don't fill them with sand or anything.
We do in some situations. The ones in front of my house were filled. One was filled completely. One was left empty. Then 95 and by 96, water over top of them had distributed. They're both about 3/4 full.
Mm-hmm.
The boxes you saw, Northumberland, the holes I think were at a 3.5 feet level above the box. And as the sand tombola built out to them, the sand just flowed right into the box and now. But, you know, completely level right across with 3.5 feet of sand inside the boxes.
And in none of these pictures did you put in any
beach just nourishment?
Just the very large one at Northumberland with the very large boxes. So we were allowed to, or the permit had us putting in 120 dump truck loads of sand in the first two.
But the other pictures that you showed, the sand naturally accretes.
The Stratford Harbor one is extremely impressive, but you have to realize in Westmoreland there are miles of 100, 200-foot high cliffs, and the top half of that cliff is pure sand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why all these people are coming to us, because, you know, there's several houses they picked up and had to move back or just simply get off the lots because they're at such high erosion. So that's an unusual area just because there's so much sand in the system.
Any other questions from the commission? All right. Thank you very much. Is there anyone in the audience in favor of this or opposed to it that wishes to address the commission? No one pro or con? Would like to hear from Vims at this point, since your report is quoted very heavily in staff report.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Specific question or just in general regarding the concept of
My question is, after hearing and seeing what we've seen, do you have any thing to add to your original report, or you stand by that report?
I think I would like to take a minute just to provide some additional insight that perhaps is not included in Chip's commentary of the project. We feel that vertical structures have the tendency to reflect wave energy, and I think you've heard that today by the agent. They have admitted a wave doubling effect of the waves reflected off the face of these types of structures. The fact that their L wall is designed with a splash plate on the bottom speaks to the fact that wave energy is directed downward in these types of situations. In addition to the reflection of wave energy, we feel that these structures provide very little habitat value in regards to or in comparison to a rock revetment, in which you have the interstitial spaces that organisms can utilize. The slides that I viewed showing what was called SAV inside the boxes appeared to be more like macroalgae and of questionable real habitat value. So we believe that toe scour is the biggest issue to be dealt with in structures that have a vertical face, that and the reflective wave energy. The fact that in one of the slides there were piles that were used for stability, and I think that is a quote from the slide, speaks to just whether or not these actually could be considered to be permanent structures. Some of the slides that represented riprap that had been strewn across the shoreline following hurricanes, you know, all I could say to that is in any type of application in which you use rock, you know, the devil is in the details. And underside stone is obviously going to be thrown around the shoreline. During Isabel, we had a tremendous storm surge. So most of the structures that you saw on the beach in the intertidal zone were covered by water. So they were relatively unaffected. It was those structures along the shoreline above mean high water that took the brunt of that storm surge. So I think the comparison there is a little misleading. You know, we heard earlier today from the council, from Mr. Loy, who even acknowledged that vertical structures are not typically a good idea in high wave energy environments, and Mr. Loy's advice was to go ahead and, you know, investigate a riprap structure. We certainly would have more comfort in a revetment, a properly designed breakwater system with large class 2, class 3 stone in this type of high energy wave setting.
Any other questions for Vims? All right.
Apparently these have been approved in other locations since they seem to be existing in Virginia.
I think, Mr. Fox, the majority of those that have been permitted were permitted prior to Virginia actually regulating the Potomac River. The majority of these structures, I believe, are on the Potomac and had been authorized by Maryland law and not Virginia law.
All right.
One question. Yeah. As far as some of those,
Mr. Schick.
Some of those beach projects that were done on the Potomac with, it didn't show that they were really scouring it showed sand actually, you know, in front of them. How does that figure into the scouring concept?
Mr. So Schick, typically in large storm events, as I said, with a storm surge above the height of those structures, you're going to increase the depth, and so the impacts to those structures are probably going to be minimal during those high water depth events.
Right.
I can't speak to the individual pictures that were taken. I've not been to any of those sites. I'm basing this on the collective wisdom of our program over many years and having visited many sites that have vertically faced structures that typically scour is a problem or can be a problem. There's certainly site-specific considerations to be acknowledged, but in general, I think we can safely say that vertical structures tend to reflect wave energy.
Right. Whether it's a breakwater or a seawall.
Or a bulkhead.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right. Any other questions for VIMS?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to give the applicant now about 2 minutes to close up.
Well, I understand VIMS' concern. I met with Dr. Mike McCormick, Press Emeritus at the Naval Academy, recently a chair in coastal engineering at Johns Hopkins. And he confirmed that, you know, breakwaters are different from a bulkhead. You already have a height of water above it. It's not crashing down right at the foot of those. It's generally above that. And a segmented breakwater is like a diffraction grating in optics. Some of the light goes through. Some of the waves go through. Some are reflected. And that makes a pattern of reflection. Now, when those waves are reflected from the, say, roughly 50% of the shore that's covered by a breakwater, then it's going against the wind. The wind is driving the waves inward. And what builds waves? Wind builds waves. But now, if the wave front is going into the wind, it's going to be pretty rapidly decreased. And hence, that's why Dr. McCormick said 2 to 3 wavelengths off the reflection, you're essentially back to very little peaking of the waves. That's one point. Secondly, Dr. Richard Seymour, I saw on the internet last night. Dr. Seymour is head of the Ocean Engineering Research Group at Scripps Institute of Oceanography, and he was the chair of the National Research Council on Beach Nourishment and Protection. And he said that really, even on the shoreline, the scour is not really caused by a vertical wall. It's the appearance of it. There was also an MIT study that said that. So they don't necessarily cause scour, but they prevent the sand from being supplied from what would otherwise be washed away, a sand dune. If they're protecting a sand dune, that sand would be on the beach. So consequently, that and the big thing is the scour and the reflection. I don't think it's a real problem when you're going into the wind. Secondly, I do think there is some we've got barnacles growing on these. There are some of the subaquatic vegetation in them, as you've seen, and there is some habitat. Now, whether it's more or less than riprap, I'm not qualified to say, but I do think that those are certainly mitigating conditions for the comments that Ben's made. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the chair. Has VMRC previously approved any of these structures in Virginia?
I'd have to refer to Bob. I can't recall.
I don't believe so. I think most of the structures, as Dave indicated, are actually in Maryland waters. Once you go beyond the water, that really will not become the commission's jurisdiction. The commission has approved some of the bulkheaded structures shoreline.
For the bulkhead, but not for the breakwater. Thank you.
Who was the engineer for this? Chip. Those structures over in Olive White, off of Mr. Luter's property, what are they?
Riprap breakwaters.
Riprap.
Mm-hmm. The more typical type that we've seen.
But they're separated. They're out in front. And
yes.
Separated.
They're gapped, and they're made of, I think the ones out there are probably class 10, class 3.
similar to the ones at VIMS and it off of the
similar to the ones off of Yorktown.
Yorktown, maybe. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much. You've heard the reports, heard the applicant, you've heard from the commission and VIMS, the matter before the commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Garrison.
The pretty breakwaters around the York River that I've observed and walked by and seen, and I think if a situation is not broke, you shouldn't try to do something else. I'd make a motion to take staff recommendation denial of the project as proposed.
You've heard the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it for discussion, Mr. Chair.
Motion seconded. Any discussion to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I tend to agree with the maker of the motion that just in general, we rely on our advisors at VIMS. I think they're certainly experts in the field in this area, and their advice is quite plainly that they believe a riprap structure would better serve the project, and I'm inclined to go with their advice at this point in time.
Mr. Fox?
I wonder whether this project with the boxes with some riprap just laid in front of it would solve some of the problems.
I thought of... Can I answer that?
Who'd you direct that to?
I guess VIMS.
VIMS? Did you answer, Mr. Fox?
Mr. Fox, we typically don't like a multiple structure approach to shoreline erosion control. The fact that there's a seawall landward of the proposed breakwater system in and of itself, I think, speaks to the uncertainty as to how well that system in and of itself will function. We typically advise against this multiple structure approach and try to look for a solution that will minimize impacts. In doing so, I would feel that in this situation, an offshore breakwater constructed of appropriately sized stone alone would be an approach that would be best suited for this.
So they wouldn't need anything onshore.
I was not asked that question,
yeah.
But that would be my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Anyone else? Mr. Garrett.
Mr. Fox, I would think you'd have a movable object there, and with a stone it could rattle around a little bit, and you'd break it down. You'd have more, mm-hmm. more destruction there, like bouncing over a ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd have that effect. And whereas at the breakwater there in the stone form, what we normally do is put a base in a breakwater with a smaller rock, and then put your armor stone on top, which weighs 500 to 1,500 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So there's very little. If you look at those breakwaters around Williamsburg, it went through the storm. There's very little breakdown in those breakwaters. You have your smaller stone to cushion your bottom and your larger armor stone on top. And it's just amazed me what a beautiful job this has done. And I think a blunt object, as Vim's talked about, would have more of a breakdown effect and not build the sand that the riprap breakwaters would build. I don't think overall the being in the area we're in here, being that close to quarried stone is a big difference in the cost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I guess the whole line of my questioning is I'm interested in whether there's a more economical solution for the landowner in all of these cases. Because I think we suffer some erosion in Virginia that if there were an economical way to stop, we probably would stop it. And so the line of my questioning was to try to see whether there was a solution here. But I'm also swayed by Vim's comments, and I think we have to rely on them. That's
Mr. Schick, thank you, Mr.
Okay.
The economics of shoreline erosion has been a big problem. That's why we have so many wooden bulkheads and why we have so much failure in shoreline protection. And I really think that this type of shoreline protection, definitely needs some engineering thoughts put to it because it would be a great advantage in shoreline protection if we could get a cheaper, easier way to do you know, the same job. And in this particular situation, since it's a first time type of thing, we don't really have anything to fall back on except for our experts and what they tell us. So, you know, I think it's a tough situation, but I definitely would like to see this type of project pursued in the future.
I agree with Mr. Schick. I think this is something that should be pursued.
Does Vince have any plans of further study on these types of structures?
We generally don't just run up and study any structure. We've studied and we actually accord committed a study of all the breakwaters in Chesapeake Bay that Scott Hardaway has just recently completed. It shows their effectiveness on that. So we study breakwaters, but we have not been asked to study any alternative structures such as these. And the one thing that we do study from a breakwater perspective that may be lost in the discussion here is they do dissipate wave energy, whether they absorb it or reflect it, whichever your design is. However, the primary function and value of a breakwater system is the beach behind it. Many of the pictures you saw were from sand-rich areas, and they trap sand. Anything you put out there will trap sand. But it's actually the beach, the robust beach that can be built up or created behind the breakwaters is your most effective shoreline erosion on a day-to-day basis.
I guess my concern, Lyle, is when any new idea comes out, I mean, the natural, our, you know, we're hard people to change, you know. I don't know if it's a fair...
As I think you found that we are, too.
...fair comparison or not, but when they first talked about cell phones, a lot of people laughed about that idea. Now they're multimillionaires because of it.
No,
computers, that instrument you're standing in right there, that wasn't very easy. That wasn't readily accepted when it was as big as that screen the first time, or bigger. So I'm just coming from that line. When I see something like they put on there that survived Isabel, we were around in Isabel, you remember, and I just hate to throw the whole thing out with a denial of this project. I wish there was some modification or some way we could look into it. I wish I had a grant to give you to study it, David, but I don't.
Well, it's unfortunate that it's been portrayed as us against the
Well, I don't look on it that way. I mean, it's,
we're encouraged it's not, as such. It's not the case. As we have seen over about 60 years of doing shoreline erosion advisories, it's a case-by-case basis, and it's... Not there is not one thing that fits every situation. Let me say that, because the estuaries, unlike open ocean, which is many of the examples that were given, are very unique, diverse geologic and physical anomalies that are everywhere that you must fit things on a case by case basis. And I do believe there are applications for this type of thing, or other than just than concrete, or excuse me, granite rock. And we are, of course, we are not against anything that's more economical to the applicant, because we see shoreline erosion as one of the major problems in the Chesapeake Bay from a water quality perspective and from a habitat perspective, and that needs to be said. However, in certain situations, there are things that do fit in our perspective and from our scientific background over many years, collective knowledge. There are certain things that do not. And in this case, this one case at this one location, with the sand budget that is there and what is proposed to be the sand behind it, we just did not feel that this was the most appropriate thing in this one instance. So we are not averse to new technologies by any means. But
Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Garrison?
I don't want to keep on with this thing, but the construction industry in Virginia has a history of being innovative. They've made many innovative things on a national basis with American road builders. Our innovative things in Virginia have been new asphalt plants. Used to be you set an asphalt plant in one spot and couldn't move it without a lot of work. Now they're just like a bicycle, you go up and down the road with them.
Same asphalt, though.
That we, right now on your 64, which you're familiar with, is a new asphalt mix, a German mix. It gives you a much better rigidity to your depth of asphalt that you lay. Concrete innovations have been massive, pre-stressed concrete. Bridges at West Point, all pre-stressed concrete, not steel. That's just a few quickly. But I think now a situation like this is something new. It's a place for it. But I do think by observing the breakwaters in the Yorktown area, which has done so great, that we shouldn't move something that don't need to be fixed today.
They didn't do so great in Isabel.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to give you one statement, and that's it. Then the commission's going to act on this. Go ahead.
Come to the podium, sir.
Come up to the mic and state your name again so we'll have a record in case this goes to court.
Ed Veazey, Cement Shoreline Systems. In the interest of science and trying something new, and just like we did before with our first L walls, we were asked to put riprap in front of those because of the scour. We found later we did not need it. The groins and such sufficed that it was plenty of sand there to be sacrificial during a storm. May I propose that with these two breakwaters, we be allowed to install them, put riprap in front of one such that it has the, you know, something to break up the waves, and leave the other one without it. And then after VIMS would have a chance to look at this, see what the results are. And if it's determined that these boxes are causing a problem to the environment, we can refloat them and remove them. This would give us a chance to study something in Virginia waters. They've been very successful in Maryland waters.
How long would you want to do that experiment?
I should take two or three years to give it a fair chance to see how it operates. And then we can remove them if necessary. But this would give a chance to see what happens with the rock in front of one and none in front of the other, and see what happens.
Thank you very much. Yes, we have a motion and a second, and you've heard the representative of the applicant suggest a modification to the commission. Anyone willing to entertain that? The floor is open to you to do that.
Chairman, I'd like to make a substitute motion.
All right. Mr. Holland.
My substitute motion would be to do exactly what the applicant just requested and give it a three-year period to work.
Is there a second to the substitute?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Fox. Discussion to the substitute motion. Dr. Jones and Mr. McCluskey.
I think you said it very well, Commissioner Pruitt, that you want to see innovation, as we all do. I think in this instance that the staff has determined, again, our best experts are the staff, they've determined that this is not a good location for this structure. The applicant has also suggested that a test be done, and I wondered whether we could consider that a test be done, but in an area where VIMS would find more appropriate, so that the state could test the technology, but test it in a place where it's more likely to work and provide a good development for Virginia.
Mr. McCluskey.
I think this is an opportunity to, at no cost to the state, to the VMRC, only to Mr. Morris, to take it and make this an experiment. Let's try it, and if it's not working, have it handed to her, that this board could have it removed within, say, three years, if that's the wish of the
Is there any further discussion to the motion, to the substitute motion? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded the original motion, but I would agree with the makers of the substitute motion that there could be some knowledge gained from doing it this way. And if we, in fact, have a property owner that's willing to do the project and fund it, it is an opportunity, I think, to further our understanding of the technology. So I think otherwise we would have to task VIMS with studying it and reporting the HMAC, and I mean it would be rather convoluted. So I think this gives us an opportunity to evaluate the technology.
Thank you.
Well,
anyone
Mr.
else?
Chairman,
Mr. Fox,
who is going to evaluate the study to see whether it's working or not?
Well, I would certainly like to ask the staff and VIMS if they'd be willing to look at it, but we'd have to.
Because somebody's got to decide whether to pull them out in 3 years or not.
And let me, just for the Lyle, so you thoroughly understand, I know Bob Grab already understands, my comments are no disrespect to VIMS or the staff. you have a job to do, and you do it very well. But as a regulatory body, we have a job to do. And once it reaches this body, and I think we have the opportunity, we have the responsibility to go beyond what everyone's, well, all the information we get and look for additional information. And I agree totally with Mr. Holland's substitute. Any discussion to the substitute? All in favor of the substitute motion, signify by raising your right hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All opposed, same sign? 1, 2. Okay, the motion carries to the substitute motion, and there'll be a Chip, you'll have to get this worked out, the wording correctly. And
just to perhaps one particular detail would be, what do you want us to do after 3 years? Do we bring it back to the commission
yes.
for mm-hmm. consideration? Okay. All right, just so I know how to write this permit.
And a progress report along the way.
Yeah, progress report.
I mean, if it shows something that it's really working or it's not really working,
okay.
that would be good, too.
And certainly right. with BIM's involvement, that's provided by code.
Yes, sir.
And I guess staff's recommendation on the size stone to be placed in front, of course.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all very much. The next item is Columbia Gas of Virginia.